Thank you very much, Dan, and thank you for inviting me to this beautiful place to give these lectures. So what I'm going to talk about is something which has been occupying my attention for the past 2 or 3 years, and it's to do with a part of differential geometry, or an extension of differential geometry, where you can move things around not just with diffeomorphisms, but with automorphisms, which are two forms. So they're usually closed two forms, and very often they're exact two forms. But they form an essential symmetry of the picture. Now it's not a fully formed theory yet. So what I'm going to talk about is very much work in progress. But there are a few things available. So I wrote a paper about a year ago called Generalized Calabi-Yau Manifolds, which has been on the web for about a year now, and will appear in the quarterly journal, the Oxford Quarterly Journal, soon. That really reflects the way I got into the subject. Now, in my third lecture, I'll describe that, which I think perhaps will convince you, or I hope it will convince you, that what I'm talking about has a natural origin, an origin in the same sense that all these special geometrical structures that we look at nowadays, like Calabi-Yau manifolds, G2 structures, spin-7 structures, emerge from that same origin. I've had a couple of graduate students working on this, and one in particular, Marco Gualtieri, is writing up his thesis at this very moment. Well, I don't know what the time is in England, but I hope he is anyway. So there should be an Oxford DPhil thesis by the end of the summer, and I hope he'll split that up very quickly and put it into pieces and put it on the web. So his work on what are called generalized complex manifolds is what I'll talk about next time. I have another student who's less advanced, because he started later, Frederick Witt, who maybe there'll be one in 2004. He's looking at different aspects of this related to G2 geometry, and I'll talk about that in, I guess, my third or fourth lecture. And then, more recently, there's been a bit of work by Daniel Huybrecht, which he's recently put on the web, which is really trying to use this concept, in fact, a generalized Calabi-Yau manifold, to describe in concrete terms moduli spaces of 4-4 superconformal field theories. But anyway, the title is Generalized Calabi-Yau Manifolds, K3 surfaces, and B fields. So you look it up. It's been on the web for 2 or 3 weeks anyway. Well, what I want to do today is just to introduce the basic setup, and then go on to the specific applications related to complex structures, G2 structures, and mixtures of the two. So the starting point then is that we're going to do differential geometry. So we start with a manifold, n-dimensional manifold, and a normal differential geometry would work with, for example, a tangent bundle, vector fields, sections of the tangent bundle, the cotangent bundle, sections of that are one-forms, so vector fields and one-forms. But the way you start this type of geometry is that you put these two together and you look at the geometry basically of the direct sum of the tangent bundle and the cotangent bundle. So a section of this you write as x plus psi. And the essential idea is somehow to replace geometry on the tangent bundle, like Riemannian metrics and so on, by geometry on this bundle. Now, of course, there are lots of ways in which you might think about this. Maybe you might prefer to extend this to the differential forms. There are lots of ways in which what I'm going to talk about extend. But for the moment, I just want to concentrate on this particular geometry. Now, so this lecture, then, I want to investigate for you the natural geometry of the tangent bundle plus the cotangent bundle. And the first thing is that there's a natural, without any choices, a natural metric, indefinite metric, on t plus t star. So we take x plus psi, think of it at a point, this is a vector in t plus t star, then you can define the inner product of x plus psi with itself to be, well, I'm going to, this doesn't make much difference, but I'm going to say, put a minus sign there. So it's minus, that you use the pairing, the non-degenerate pairing between t and t star, and so you say the inner product of x plus psi with itself, you just evaluate the one form psi on the tangent vector x. And I'm going to use a lot in my calculations the interior product, so it can be useful to write it that way. So that's just contraction with the vector field on the one form. So this is a bilinear form, a non-degenerate bilinear form on t plus t star. And of course, well, obviously xx is equal to 0 and psi psi is equal to 0. So these t and t star are themselves isotropic subbundles, maximally isotropic, half the dimension. So this is a quadratic form of signature nn. Completely indefinite, but non-degenerate. And this metric is, of course, natural. Well, what does it mean? It means that it's diffeomorphism invariant. So you could say that any diffeomorphism transforms this metric to itself. So there's a sense in which, I mean, it's not a metric in the usual sense, but there's a natural action of diffeomorphisms on T and consequently on T star. And so you can think of diffeomorphisms, if you like, as isometries of this metric, any diffeomorphism. But there are others. Well, in particular, it's clear that, again, to say that this is natural means that even the automorphisms of the tangent bundle, the gauge transformations, if you like, of the tangent bundle, these preserve this metric, of course, because it's just the natural pairing between T and T star. But suppose we look at the full Lie algebra of the orthogonal automorphisms of T plus T star. So at each point of the manifold M, we have a Lie algebra, SONN Lie algebra, consisting of the infinitesimal automorphisms preserving the quadratic form. And we can describe that in terms of endomorphisms of T plus T star. So if we look at the Lie algebra of the orthogonal automorphisms, so by this I mean that there's a bundle of Lie algebras on this manifold, and at each point we get a finite dimensional Lie algebra. So what does it look like? These are all endomorphisms. So this consists, this sits inside the endomorphisms of T plus T star. What does it look like? Well, it's in terms of a block matrix decomposition. We have the automorphisms of T. So if we say you have A as an automorphism T, it acts here on T and it acts here in the usual way on the dual. But then there are pieces here on the off-diagonal terms. So there's beta there and B there. So remember, this is, we think of this as acting on T plus T star. And what is beta? Well, beta is a map from T star to T, which, in order to preserve the metric, or to be in the Lie algebra of the orthogonal group, should be a two-tensor. And this one, which is more important to us, B, is actually a 2-4. So this is the first place that we see two forms coming. So if I have a global two-form over the manifold, then I can think of it, in particular, as describing an infinitesimal orthogonal automorphism of this structure. And I can exponentiate that. Okay, that's something in the Lie algebra. Exponentiate it and get something in the group. Well, what happens if you exponentiate something here with 0, 0, 0 there? This is completely nilpotent. So if you exponentiate it, then what do we get? So here's the first place in which a B field, a two-form, appears as an automorphism of a structure. What do we get? Well, so a two-form B defines an orthogonal automorphism of T plus T star by what transformation? Well, it's x plus xi maps to, well, as I say, exponentiate 0, 0, 0, b, and there's not much that happens. You get x plus xi, it's a translation essentially, plus the interior product of x with b. Okay, b is a two-form, interior product of x with b is a one-form. So this is the first place that we see a two-form giving us an automorphism of some structure. What structure is it? It's the natural metric structure on T plus T star. Now, you might say, why don't we think of two tensors instead of two forms? That's a good question. But in a sense, what we're going to be doing is one-sided from the linear algebra point of view here. It's there's a total symmetry between T and T star, but we'll be opting to choose the two form rather than two vector point of view. Yeah?
So focusing on beta corresponds to thinking about non-commutative deformation in manifold.
Well, it could do, yes. In fact, what we'll see is that two vectors can be used to deform the structure. So it's rather like saying that the sort of structures we're going to be looking at transform very naturally under B fields. And when you look at moduli spaces, then typically you look at moduli equivalence classes, modulo closed or exact B fields. Then you can use two vectors to actually give you non-trivial deformations of these things. So the sense is that these things are automorphisms. Of course, there's the cohomology class, which is a whole issue about whether closed two forms or exact two forms are the ones to consider, or closed two forms with integral periods. But the two vectors will certainly come in to give non-trivial deformations. So Poisson structures, for example, will generate non-trivial generalized complex structures. Okay, well, so that's the first place that we see this geometry. So now, so we have this orthogonal structure on T plus T star. The next thing we want to look at are spinners. Spinners for the group. Okay, so we have a metric of signature NN. So we want to look at spinners for the orthogonal group ONN. Okay, so if you like, one thing that we have is, if you like, an ONN structure. You might say that this natural structure is a reduction of the structure group. There is a natural reduction of the structure group of T plus T star to the group ON, N. And so we want to now take the associated bundle of spinners. Well, there's some slight complications here, which I don't want to bother about too much, because ONN, of course, is homotopy equivalent to ON cross ON, which means that it has four components, and the fundamental group has Z2 cross Z2, and the issues, which I'm sure a number of people in the audience have thought about more than I have, about the spinners. But in a sense, the spinners that I want to think about are the ones which we take by realizing that our vector space with the orthogonal structure is already decomposed as the direct sum of two maximally isotropic subspaces. And it's well known that you can construct spinners out of the exterior algebra of a maximally isotropic subspace. So if we want to think of this in concrete terms, then we can take the exterior algebra of T star, so that is the exterior algebra of a maximal isotropic subspace, and we can define a multiplication, Clifford multiplication, on this. So what is this? So this is just a form, of course. So we take suppose I take a form of mixed degree, then I can define a multiplication of a vector, so a vector, an element of T plus T star on phi, by just taking the interior product with the vector plus the exterior product with the one form. And what properties does this have? Well, that if I square it, of course, this gives me ix of ix phi plus psi wedge phi plus psi wedge ix phi plus psi wedge phi. So I'm just spelling this out for you because I have five lectures, so I can afford to do that. The square of the interior product is zero, and the interior product acts as a derivation. So that bit is zero. Here I have ix psi phi minus psi wedge ix phi plus psi wedge ix phi, and psi wedge psi is zero. That goes with that. So this is equal to this by the definition of the inner product. This, of course, is minus x plus psi phi. So this is the defining property of Clifford multiplication. So we think then of exterior forms as being spinners for this ONN structure. Now, as I say, it's not quite spinners. So this is more like a spin C action. So strictly speaking, and there are various ways of being strict. So strictly speaking, the spinners should be thought of as the exterior algebra tensored with the top degree of the tangent bundle to the square root. So, and this is slightly complicated by the fact of all these different components here, which lifting basically of the general linear group you're actually talking about. So essentially, there's the, if I look at the this representation as a representation of the general linear group GLNR with positive GLNR plus, the ones with positive determinant, so this is, there's an action of the GLNR plus on this, this extends to an action of a spin group on this. So this is just like if you're doing spinners on a, in that usual Euclidean context, if you're doing them on a Kähler manifold, then spinners are basically zero p forms tensored with the square root of the canonical bundle. And in this setup, there is, strictly speaking, that twist. But to all intents and purposes, the twist will just say that the natural bilinear forms on spinners take values not in the reals or the complexes, but in the top exterior power of the cotangent bundle. Well, that I think will become evident a little later. So the issue here then is that that in this structure, that differential forms are the same thing in this setup as spinners. So we'll always think of differential forms, or nearly always, as being spinners for this orthogonal structure on T plus T star. So in doing so, what do we gain from this? Well, the first thing we gain is that, as I said before, that the diffeomorphism group preserves this inner product on T plus T star, and therefore acts in a natural way on spinners. Well, that's just its natural action on forms. But we also have this part of the orthogonal Lie algebra, the two form. So it acts on vectors, T plus T star, by this simple translation action. But now you could ask, you know, how does the B field, which sits inside the Lie algebra of the orthogonal group, and therefore in the Lie algebra of the spin group, how does it act on spinners, which are forms? So, well, that's easy to work out from this Clifford action here. So this acts through the Lie algebra on spinners, which are really forms, by exterior multiplication, right, which is just phi maps to B wedge phi. And if we exponentiate this, then what do we get? We get that a two form, B, acts on spinners by what? Exponentiating this, phi goes to e to the b wedge phi. So this is another piece of data that a b field, a two form, any two form, acts through the Lie algebra and its exponentiation as an automorphism of spinners, but spinners for T plus T star are forms on the manifold. It acts by multiplying by exponential. So this exponential is just the exponential with forms, of course, 1 plus b squared over 2 factorial, etc. So this is an important feature of this picture, that we have a B field, a two form, acting on sections of T plus T star, acting on the bundle T plus T star in this way, and acting on forms, exterior forms, which we think of as spinners for T plus T star in this particular way. So whenever we have a geometry which is defined by spinners, and of course, as we know in ordinary Riemannian geometry, the interesting geometries, in particular for physics, geometries like G2 geometry, SUN geometry, spin 7 geometry, they're all determined by spinners. And in this generalized setup, we see that we can transform spinners by a two-form in this particularly simple way. Okay, so that's the way two-form acts on spinners. Now, spinners themselves have a lot of internal structure. Of course, it's slightly mysterious what that structure is, because, if you like, the spin representation in general is a dimension 2 to the n or something like that. And so there's the spin group, spin n, is only of dimension nn minus 1 over 2. So there's a lot of internal structure on spinners, which is difficult to describe. But one of the features is that there is, in general, a bilinear form defined on the spin representation. So in the ordinary orthogonal group picture, the compact case, this is just occurs because of, if I have a real spin representation, then because spin n is compact, there is an inner product on the, but now in this indefinite case, that's modified slightly, but it appears in terms of a pairing. So we need to understand the usual invariant pairing on spinners in terms of a pairing on forms here. So what do I mean by that? So if I take let me start by thinking of the even forms. Okay, so we can split the spinners into even and odd. Here, well, we know there's an even and odd splitting of the spin representation, but in this setup it occurs, we just think of them as even and odd forms. Now let me start by just looking at the even forms, or even spinners, and then just note that the transformation phi goes to e to the b phi takes even to even and odd to odd, because b is a two-form. Now I want to define, so phi, if I spell phi out, then it has components of different degrees. And I want to define sigma of phi to be phi 0 minus phi 2 plus phi 4 minus etc. Just the, I alternate the sign. And now, I now. Sorry?
You're taking an even form and changing.
Yeah, I'm taking an even form and I'm changing the sign. I could do it for an odd form and I just take, you know, phi 1 minus phi 3, etc., etc. So then I want to define a pairing, a bilinear pairing on even forms. Well, so now let me suppose now that the dimension of m is equal to, let's say, 2m, which is even. There are different cases to consider. And then I want to define the pairing. So I want to define phi psi to be, so I now think of these as forms. I take phi wedge sigma psi, and then I take the top degree component of that. So that's in wedge 2 and d star. So this is sometimes called the Mukai pairing. Often in at least in four dimensions, this is often called the Mukai pairing. See, it's in four dimensions. It's phi 0, phi 4, minus phi 2 squared, plus phi 0, phi 4. So it's the on the even forms in four dimensions. It's not the cut product. It's the cut product where you change the sign. So what's so special about this? So, I mean, why it's called the Mukai pairing is all to do with the Mukai transform, I guess. But from this context, it's to do with thinking of forms as spinners for t plus t star. So what is the point about this? The point is that if I transform by a B field, phi and psi, what do I get? I get phi wedge, so I get e to the b phi wedge sigma of e to the b psi. But then I'm changing the sign here, so this is actually e to the b wedge phi wedge e to the minus b wedge sigma psi, and e to the b goes with e to the minus b, so this is phi psi. In other words, this pairing, this so-called Mukai pairing, I don't know whether that's really the right word for it, it's just the natural pairing on spinners, this Mukai pairing is invariant. In fact, this is the it's in fact invariant under the whole of spin NN. But for our purposes, it's in particular important to notice that it's invariant under the action of under a B field action. If I'd just taken the ordinary wedge product and taken the top degree part, then that wouldn't have been true. But because we're thinking of forms of spinners, and this is the invariant form, invariant bilinear form on spinners, then it the B field acts as an automorphism of this. So now let me just say that this gives us a bilinear form on forms. Think of forms as spinners, but it's a bilinear form with values in this one-dimensional vector space here. So if we go back to when I said that, strictly speaking, for spinners, we have to twist the forms by this square root, then if you do that twist, then this is an invariant bilinear form which takes values in the reals. So, I mean, when I say that this is like considering spin C in a positive definite situation, the bilinear form on spinners takes values in a line bundle here. But that's, you know, I think, you know, if I use the word spinners for forms in this context, I don't think this twist makes very much difference. So we have now this I said in the case where M is even, so if the dimension, well, first of all, I could do this the same thing for odd. If the dimension of M is even, I can do the same thing for odd, and I get a non-degenerate bilinear form on the odd forms. And if the dimension of M is even, sorry, if the dimension of M is odd to M plus 1, then this defines a bilinear, non-degenerate bilinear pairing between odd forms and even forms. So let me just write that down altogether. So first of all, what we get is that this is a non-degenerate. And and if the dimension of M is divisible by 4, then it's a symmetric form. And if the dimension is equal to 2 mod 4, then it's a skew form. And in odd dimensions, as I say, it gives a non-degenerate pairing between odd forms and even forms, which again is invariant under the action of this two form, this B field. Okay, so here, this is the picture then. We have this geometry. I mean, all I've done really at the moment is linear algebra, but I haven't started differentiating anything. But what we have then is that the bundle T plus T star instead of T, we have an indefinite metric on it, which is invariant under the full diffeomorphism group and the space of two forms. And if we consider spinners for this, then we're thinking of forms, but forms where the fact that we're thinking of them as spinners comes in where we use this Mukai product instead of the ordinary exterior wedge product evaluating in the top degree. Okay, so now let me consider then, this is the basic geometry. Let me consider the question of automorphisms of this geometry. What is the natural group by means of which we're going to transform objects? Now, so what we're going to do is to define particular objects on T plus T star which are compatible with the pre-existing metric structure, and these will be transformed by B fields, by two forms. So we really need to understand the bit more what the automorphism group of this structure is. So there are two things that we have then. So first of all, we have that the diffeomorphism group of M preserves the inner product, preserves the metric on T plus D star. And also we have that the two forms, the space, the vector space of sections of the bundle of two forms also preserves the metric. So we have these two infinite dimensional groups of transformations which preserve this metric by their natural action. So the group that we should be considering really is the, well, put these two together, it's the semi-direct product of the diffeomorphism group. How do you do this? It's like that, is it? Semi-direct product of the diffeomorphism group and the two forms. So this is a group which has a homomorphism to the diffeomorphism group, whose kernel is the just the additive group of two forms. So if we want to think of the Lie algebra of this, then the Lie algebra the Lie algebra of the group of diffeomorphisms just consists of the vector fields. So we have a vector field plus a two form, and then the bracket is just take the Lie bracket on the vector fields, and then we take the Lie derivative action, that's the natural action of diffeomorphisms on two forms. The infinitesimal version of that is the Lie derivative. So we have the Lie derivative minus Lie derivative y, b. So from the point of view of the Lie algebra, then the automorphism group, I mean, it's not the full automorphism group, but it's certainly the one that we're going to be looking at, is the semi-direct product. Now, it's so if we think of how it acts, so this acts preserving the metric, so it acts on spinners, which are really forms, of course, in our context. And so the Lie algebra action is something which we'll see. So a spinner then is a form, a global form. What is the action on this at the level of the Lie algebra? Well, it's just the Lie derivative of phi plus b wedge phi. So we just think of this as this particular natural group of automorphisms, and this is its natural action on spinners. So there's an interesting point here which may come up later. So suppose that B is closed, and also that the spinner, the form, is closed. Then what does this action look like? Well, as you know, there's this great formula for the Lie derivative of forms, Cartan formula, which is that d of the interior product plus interior product d of phi. So what does this Lie algebra action look like? It looks like d of ix phi plus ix d phi plus... Well, actually, I don't mean closed. I think I want this to be exact. Then this is d psi wedge phi. Well, if phi is closed, then this term is zero. So what do we get? What we get is that d of ix phi plus psi wedge phi. So this is d of the, if you like, the Clifford action of x plus psi on phi. Well, for the moment, that's just something to note, but that this Clifford action actually appears in the action of this group. Now, this, although this is an automorphism group, I just remark also that because, you know, why did I choose this? B is exact. And this will become a bit more relevant when I start talking about moduli spaces of certain structures. So very often we'll actually restrict the group to, let's say, the component of the identity of the diffeomorphism group. So typically, of course, if you're doing moduli space theory, if you're doing Teichmuller theory for Riemann surfaces, then you look, Teichmuller space is the space of complex structures, modulo diffeomorphisms connected to the identity. And we also very often, so it's like saying that we restrict to those diffeomorphisms which are topologically trivial, and likewise we tend to restrict to the exact two forms as well. So that's if you like, the group that one tends to use for moduli spaces, Teichmuller theory, and so on. So what it means is that there is that the closed two form, which is not exact, tends to act in a non-trivial way on a moduli space of certain structures associated with this background geometry. Right, so that's the automorphism group. So now, by looking at diffeomorphism groups and Lie brackets and so on, and Lie derivatives, we're already beginning to look at the not just the linear algebra associated to this geometry, but also at the calculus, at the differential geometry. And there's one important object which is slightly mysterious. It's still slightly mysterious, and I always have trouble in justifying this. But it's just there, and it's been written about for 20 years, more than 20 years, but why it should be so important is not perhaps so clear. This is something called the Courant bracket. So this is not the Courant of the Courant Institute, not Richard or Courant and Hilbert. It's not Richard Courant. It's a Courant, Thomas Courant, I think. Ted Courant. Okay, so he was a student of Alan Weinstein, I think, 20 odd years ago. And he wrote a paper called Dirac structures, which are, in a sense, I'll mention what they are in a few minutes. There, if you like, the first example of a structure which you impose on this background geometry and study. So the Courant bracket is a bracket on sections of T plus T star. So we have to think of it. If we think of replacing the tangent bundle on a manifold by T plus T star, then this is the analog of the Lie bracket. What is it? Well, I'm going to have to look at my notes in a minute. So we take two sections, and we, first of all, you write down the obvious bracket. So this is the bracket which is the semi-direct product of diffeomorphisms and the one forms. So, you know, if I'd replaced this by one forms, then I would have got this as the bracket operation. But then you add on this other term, minus a half d of ix eta minus iy psi. So, as I say, this part is really the bracket structure on the Lie algebra of the semi-direct product of one forms with this, but then it's modified by this extra term, which is an exact derivative. And this is, you can check if you like, that this is a bracket, it's a skew-symmetric bracket, but it doesn't satisfy the Jacobi identity. But its failure to satisfy the Jacobi identity is a is a relatively simple term. So, you know, you can focus on what symplectic people call the Jacobiator, if you wish. But anyway, this is a bracket operation on sections of T plus T star. Now, why is it important? And the proposition, if you like, that the Courant bracket is invariant under the action of a closed B field. So it's invariant under x plus psi. Well, if we transform both these, so a B field gives us an automorphism. That automorphism actually preserves the Courant bracket. So it's x plus psi plus ix psi. Oh, sorry, B. If B is closed. So it's worth, I think. Let me see if I can prove it. So this, it seems to me that this, for me at least, this is the important thing about the Courant bracket. If I just consider this bracket operation, it wouldn't have this property of being invariant under closed two forms. So obviously the diffeomorphism group preserves this bracket because everything is defined in terms of diffeomorphism invariant operations, Lie derivatives, exterior derivative contractions, and so on. But to get it invariant under this bigger group, so we're thinking of closed two forms, well, this extra term does that, and the straightforward one doesn't. So let me call this, so this is this transformation, so let me just say, give it a name. Automorphism of x of t plus t star. Remember, it's an orthogonal automorphism. I don't know whether we'll need that. So what do we do? Well, so first of all, suppose we look at A of the bracket. So this is a calculation. I hope I'm going to get it right. So this is just we just take Lie derivative minus Lie derivative psi minus a half. So that's just the definition of the Courant bracket, and the extra term we get is the interior product of this thing, the Lie bracket, with B. And now we've got to compare that with the bracket of A x plus psi A y plus eta. And what is that? So that's x plus psi plus ixb plus y plus eta plus iyb. Bracket. All of these are just calculations. On the other hand, you might say that's just the formula, so at least we ought to see that it actually happens. On the other hand, I can't do it cold, so I have to look at my notes. So what is this? Expand this thing out, and we just get, of course, we get the usual expression. We get this, eta plus iyb minus Lie derivative y of psi plus ixb minus a half d of ix eta plus iyb minus I y psi plus I x b. That's a d, and this is all outside. Okay, so what are the extra terms we're looking at? Are the ones which involve the b. So we have to show that these terms involving the b add up to be this interior product of the Lie bracket. So what do we have? We have the Lie derivative then of IYB minus the Lie derivative of Y of IXB. And then we pick up these two terms, well, it's XY and YX. Interior product is skew symmetry, is anti-commute, so we get this. Okay. So these are the terms which we're interested in. So the first thing you do is that you rewrite this. You use the Lie derivative, okay, d of ix plus ix d. So this thing you can write as the Lie derivative of iyb minus, so this is minus ix of d of iyb. So that's just using the formula for the Lie derivative. And you see that then this term goes with this one. So now we're left with minus the Lie derivative of ixb plus ix times d of iyb. But b is closed, so d of iyb plus iydb is the Lie derivative of this. That's ix of the Lie derivative of b with respect to y. And now consider the, so what is this? This is minus the Lie derivative of ixb plus the Lie derivative of y of ixb minus I of yxb. Okay, I'll just take the Lie derivative of this and I get this term, but I have to take the Lie derivative of the x in there. So that goes with that and I get this and then xy is minus yx. So that's equal to that. Well, it's a calculation, but it shows you then that this Courant bracket actually is a piece of data naturally existing on the manifold, which is invariant under this, under the group. Now it's the group of the semi-direct product of diffeomorphisms and closed two forms. So we're already in the region where we would like our B field, our two form, to be closed. Okay, so yeah.
The work of Rosenberg and Weinstein is somewhat different bracket, which is not symmetric.
Yeah, so that's
this property that it's in their respective B field.
That's right. So you're sort of trying to say, well, is there, you know, maybe that this is the unique skew bracket which is invariant in the B field. Yeah. I mean, there are other brackets. That's, it's true. And the point which has been made to me by well, by other people as well, that there are, in technical terms, sometimes it's easier to do calculations using this non-skew bracket. I mean, all of these are invariantly defined in terms of d's and ix's and so on. I guess in thinking of this as the analog of the Lie bracket, then making it skew seems to be the right thing to do. But I mean, I think it all depends what you're trying to do, and also whether you're trying to simplify some of the calculations. So now, okay, what point have we reached? So the point is the following. I want to define for you, to finish this lecture, two types of geometrical structure which involve the T plus T star, involve the orthogonal structure on this, the metric, and involve the Courant bracket. And having defined those, it will be clear from what I've said that actually we can transform these by something in this group, because diffeomorphisms and closed two forms preserve everything inside. They preserve the orthogonal structure on T plus T star, and they preserve the Courant bracket. So let me start with the geometry that Courant himself defined. In fact, the title of his paper of 1980 or so, which was a Dirac structure. So here's a definition. So I'm not going to be talking about Dirac structures, but it's the simplest object, and it's something which relates to what I'm going to be talking about. So a Dirac structure. Why Dirac? Well, it's Dirac because of Dirac brackets, constrained Hamiltonian systems. So a Dirac structure on a manifold M is a sub-bundle E inside T plus T star such that, first of all, E is maximally isotropic in other words, if I restrict the natural metric on T plus T star to E, it vanishes completely. And secondly, that sections of E are closed under Courant bracket. So you might say that this is just the analog of an integrable distribution, the foliation, an integrable sub-bundle of the tangent bundle, integrable in the Pfaffian sense. It's just that we replace the tangent bundle by T plus T star and we make this other assumption. Now there's a reason for that, which I'll come to when we look at some examples here. So this is a simple definition, and what examples are there? Well, some trivial ones. First of all, if we take the tangent bundle inside T plus T star, that of course is maximally isotropic. And the Courant bracket, so if psi and eta are equal to zero, then the Courant bracket is just the Lie bracket. And obviously, sections of the tangent bundle are closed under the Lie bracket. So this is a trivial example. Another one is if you take the cotangent bundle inside T plus T star. Again, this is maximally isotropic. And, what is the... if X and Y are equal to zero, then the Courant bracket is actually zero completely. So certainly sections of this are closed under the Courant bracket. The third is more interesting, suppose you have a symplectic manifold. So you have symplectic form omega. Then you define E to be equal to the set of all things of the form x plus interior product of x with omega. In other words, lots of ways of thinking of this. So you can think of a two-form omega as being a linear map from T to T star. So you can think of E as being the graph of that linear map, if you like, inside T plus T star. So why does this satisfy these conditions, maximally isotropic and sections closed under Courant bracket? Well, it's easy if you see what we've established so far, because you see, what is this? This is, in fact, E is equal to A of T, where A of X plus psi is equal to just the B field. We think of the two form, the symplectic two form, as a B field. It's closed. And so basically, if we're saying psi is equal to zero, that's what T is. E is the image of T under this automorphism. So what we've already seen is that this automorphism preserves the orthogonal structure. So maximally isotropic is preserved. It also preserves the Courant bracket, and so since T is one of these structures, so is this.
Doesn't it only get to be a closed two?
Exactly. Yeah. So, it's useful to have symplectic. I mean, it's true. Omega need only be closed, but one of the applications that Courant uses is this. The next example is perhaps a little less obvious. And that is that if I have a Poisson manifold, so if M is a Poisson manifold, C So then, suppose I have, what shall I call it, beta as a section of wedge 2 of t. If this is the Poisson structure, so it satisfies this equation involving the Skouten bracket. Then you look at it the other way around, if you like, that if you define E to be equal to the set of things of the form, well, everything is dual, so let me just say beta psi plus psi in T plus T star. So what I'm saying here is that I now take, I think of beta as being a map from T to T star, and I apply it to T star and I get the, sorry, I think of beta as being a map from T star to T, apply it to psi, and I get this. So this is like saying that this is like adopting the other point of view. All the time we've been thinking of T star as being important, but actually taking the graph of the map from T star to T, given by a two form, which is a Poisson structure, that also defines a Dirac structure. So that's something you have to work out. Of course, except in the case that this is non-degenerate and is the inverse of a symplectic form, then of course it's just the, this is where, and you can just see it because of this one. And then finally, another example is that suppose I have V inside the tangent bundle. Suppose this is an integrable subbundle. In other words, that integrable in the Pfaffian sense, foliation, that is a subbundle of the tangent bundle whose sections are closed under the Lie bracket. And then suppose we look at its annihilator inside T plus T star, inside T star, then V plus the annihilator. This now has half the dimension, and this is isotropic, but this is also a Dirac structure. So this is a notion. The notion of Dirac structure is something which generalizes symplectic manifolds, Poisson manifolds, and foliations. So it's a very general picture. Sorry? I don't think I could, actually. It goes in a... All I would say is that is, I think, is the motivation for Courant in his original paper. It doesn't really relate to anything else that I want to say. So it seems that this was a... When you look at submanifolds, you can do something similar. You can look at the tangent bundle of the submanifold plus its annihilator. And I think the structure induced on that by the Courant bracket is a convenient formal way of describing the difference between, well, when you have a symplectic submanifold, looking at Poisson brackets of restricted functions and restricted Poisson brackets. So I think this setup is where V is not just an integral subbundle, but is a tangent bundle of a submanifold is the key to that. Let me just give you, if you like, a proof of this, except it's not quite a proof. So, I mean, what would we normally say here in this last situation? We would say that by Frobenius's theorem, if I have an integrable subbundle of T, then locally I can find a basis of sections of T, which is given by this, where x1 up to xn is a coordinate system. So this is by Frobenius. Sorry, it's by Navier. And then the annihilator, of course, is spanned by dxm plus 1, dxn. These span the annihilator. And so here is something which is not quite a proof, but I'll tell you in a minute why it's not a proof. So then I say, well, we've just got to check that these things are closed. If we look at things like this, well, what do I say? I look at these things commute, and these are tangent vectors. So basically, I need to show that that this sort of thing is equal to zero in the Courant bracket, and that is pretty clear because this is now the Lie derivative. This is d of dxm by dxi. Then I have minus a half b of this interior product of that with that, which is the same thing, dxm by dxi. In any case, these things are constant, so this is equal to zero. Now, well, what is wrong with this? This is what?
No,
it's not a Lie bracket. The important thing is this, that it's all very well to say I have a bundle, t plus t star, and I have a sub-bundle of this, and it's all very well to say, let me suppose that the sections of this sub-bundle are closed under Courant bracket. Now, we're so familiar with the Frobenius situation that we don't realize that there's actually a subtlety in that. I mean, the point is that the obstruction to integrability is not necessarily a sort of tensorial object. So this is a bad proof, if you like. So now, and I want to sort of bring out this. It's the isotropic condition which comes in. So you might, it's close to a proof. But the point is, why is it that in the definition of a Dirac structure you say that this subbundle must be isotropic? And the reason is that this whole question that suppose I have x plus psi, suppose I have two sections, x plus psi, y plus psi, suppose these are sections of E, and suppose the bracket, the Courant bracket, is also a section of E. Well, what happens if I multiply this by a function? Is it true that this is also a section of E? Well, in general, no. I mean, if you're just talking about sub-bundles of the tangent bundle and the Lie bracket, it's true. I mean, so, you know, checking integrability for a sub-bundle of T, you just ought to check it on a basis of sections. But see, what happens with the Courant bracket is this, that if you take the, for example, if you take f of x plus psi, f times x plus psi, y plus eta, and you work this out, well, I'll just tell you what it is. It's this plus a half df wedge ix eta plus iy psi minus y acting on f times x plus psi. So suppose I was in my original situation that I have two sections of E and their Courant bracket is a section of E. Suppose I now multiply one of them by a function. What happens? Well, this is a section of E. This is a function. This is a section of E. But what about this? So in general, we can't claim that this condition is independent of multiplying by a function. But in this case, what is ix eta plus iy psi? So ix eta plus iy psi is equal to, I think it's maybe minus a half of x plus psi y plus eta. Now, to say that, if this subbundle is isotropic, that means the metric restricted to it is completely zero. So that will be zero if E is isotropic. So in this definition of a Dirac structure, the isotropic condition is important, because what it says is that this term, if E is isotropic, this term disappears, and then this obstruction to integrability really is, if you like, tensorial. It's like saying that, so we have E inside T plus T star, and then the obstruction is a homomorphism from wedge 2 of E into the quotient. Mm-hmm. Something which is linear over the functions. So that's where the obstruction lies, obstruction to integrability, in this Courant sense. So we'll always encounter, when we're considering this Courant bracket and structures related to this, we always encounter this isotropic condition, this extra condition, over and above the usual integrability for subbundles. So it's just that we get used to this idea that you know, something is closed, sections are closed under bracket structure, but to think of that being something which is has a tensorial obstruction, like curvature, if you like, imposes these conditions on the structure. Okay, well, I've told you what a Dirac structure is. Let me just tell you one definition now, which I'll elaborate in the next lecture, because it's very similar to a Dirac structure, except that it's got complex numbers. So, definition is that a generalized. Now, this is these are the words which I've used. I mean, they're not perfect words, but since there are so many objects which appear in this picture, which have their analogs in ordinary geometry, it seems reasonable to use this. So, a generalized complex structure on a manifold. Well, the manifold actually has to be even dimension. Is a subbundle inside the complexification of T plus T star. Such that we have, first of all, that E is maximally isotropic. That E intersection E bar is equal to zero, and sections of A are closed under the Courant bracket. So this and this are basically the conditions that for over the reals, these are the conditions for a Dirac structure. But of course, the Dirac structure is completely the opposite of this. E is real, so E intersection E bar is n-dimensional or 2m-dimensional for a Dirac structure. In this case, it's zero. So what can I say about that? Well, first of all, that because this is a structure defined using the orthogonal structure on T plus T star. And the Courant bracket, I know that if I transform this by a diffeomorphism or a closed B field, I get another such structure. What structure is it? Well, this condition itself, to say that I have a subbundle of the complexification of this bundle such that E intersection E bar is equal to zero, that's the same thing as putting an almost complex structure on T plus T star. Right? So what this says is that I have an almost complex structure on the real bundle T plus T star. This one actually also says that it's compatible with the metric in the sense that the metric is pseudo-Hermitian with respect to this complex structure. But as we've seen, isotropicness also relates to this issue of being closed under Courant bracket. So you can think of this as being something like an almost complex structure on T plus T star, or a complex structure on T plus T star, which satisfies an integrability condition like the Courant bracket. And what are the examples here? So the first is a symplectic manifold. Which is where you define E to be the set of all things X plus, now it's just as before, but now you put an I for the square root of minus 1, there are too many I's here, so let me just write it, I X omega. Okay, so the reason why this is satisfies these conditions is exactly the same as what I said before, because you know, we just complexify it actually. So a symplectic manifold is an example of a generalized complex manifold, but also a complex manifold So in this case, you take E to be equal to T 1, 0 plus T star 0, 1. So we have a complex structure on E, so we have the 1, 0 forms. This is inside T plus T star tends to C. So in this case, what we're saying is that, if you like, this is spanned by in ordinary complex coordinates, dz, d by dz1, d by dzm, and dz1 bar, dzm bar. And it's easy to see that the Courant bracket on any linear combinations of these is zero, and of course the isotropic condition means that if I take the interior product of this with one of these, then of course it's zero, because this is a 1-0 vector, and this is a 0-1-4. So the point here is that if we adopt this as our notion of a generalization of a complex structure, then strangely enough, symplectic manifolds and complex manifolds are both examples of these generalized complex structures. So in a way, that's one of the places that I first got involved with this, in six real dimensions, and trying to understand to what extent symplectic structures on six manifolds and complex structures on six manifolds were part of a bigger picture. But I'll talk about this in more detail tomorrow, where, in fact, most of what I'll be talking about is part of Marco Gualtieri's thesis, which is entirely on the subject of generalized complex manifolds. So I better finish there for today.
Question?
Yeah?
It's very important in the study of complex structures that you can express it as the dimension of the Lyapunov torsion. And is there an analog, a tensor,
Yes, because I already said that. I mean, this isotropic condition tells you that there is, so that if you like, if you have to start with just an isotropic subbundle, I mean, right. So if you start with the linear algebra data without the integrability, then the obstruction to integrability is going to be, in this case, so it's a homomorphism from wedge to E, so it's something which lies, and then in the quotient is E bar because of this, so it's something, so this is where the obstruction lies. Yeah, and in fact, I'll mention a little bit tomorrow that, I mean, you can build up a deformation theory a la Kuranishi for these things, where well, there are some important differences, but basically, the starting point is exactly the same.
Yeah, so at the beginning, when you're talking about the automorphism group, you mentioned that there were these two tensors, beta as well as the two forms.
Yeah.
B, but then, you didn't talk much about beta.
No.
So is the Courant bracket invariant under beta?
Well, the Courant bracket is already asymmetrical, if you like. You see, it's the answer is no. I mean, on the algebra, on the vector field level, it's just the ordinary Lie bracket. So it singles out. In fact, it's an example of, well, it's not quite a Lie algebraoid, but it's this. I mean, there are these structures where you can have vector bundles in general, which have maps to the tangent bundle, and which have a bracket structure which is compatible with the Lie bracket under this map. And in a sense, this Courant bracket is something like that, except that it's not quite a Lie algebraoid because the Jacobi identity doesn't hold. Although I should say, I mean, I didn't say this, that on a maximally isotropic sub, or an isotropic subbundle, the Jacobi identity does hold. So in other words, if you have an isotropic subbundle whose sections are closed under a Courant bracket, then actually the Jacobi identity does hold on that. So this is, on the other hand, the projection onto T is not necessarily surjective. So these sort of things are, in some sense, what are called Lie algebraoids. But so the Courant bracket already, if you like, prefers the tangent bundle, or the whichever you like, to the cotangent bundle, and it's not going to be invariant under those under something like, I don't think, I don't know, actually, to be honest, I'm not quite sure about that particular one. But I would say that it's, you know, that the linear algebra is totally symmetric under the two, and obviously there's a choice that's been made here, limiting, I mean, there's probably some bigger picture behind all this, whereby this is a limit where you focus attention on one rather than the other, and there's another limit where you focus attention on the other. It's just that in this situation, we sort of forget almost about that two tenths apart, and we concentrate on the action of the B field, and a number of differential geometric objects come out of it. But it's clear that there is something within there where the role of the two tenses rather than the two forms should be important. I mean, that pairing, of course, occurs in lots of different places, yeah. So I was trying to think of it in terms of pairing in K-theory and the Chern character, but it's like taking the Chern of E dual to the Chern of E is changing that sign. Yeah.
Other questions?